There are a lot of ways to help raise the vibrational frequency in the body. One of the ways, which is really difficult to convince people, is self-care. I'm so busy and I don't have time and so forth. And I said, you're never going to find it. You have to make it. Our perception of an experience is key.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
18 Summers Tribe, good to be back with you guys. We are here today with Denise. Denise, thank you for joining us. It's going to be a great conversation today, especially with what we were going to talk about.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
And you were just asking, we received a book from you maybe a week ago. I think we had just gotten back into town from somewhere and the illustrations are so fun. It caught our children's eyes straight away. And I know you have one right there in your hand. I'm sorry, I should be holding mine.
Oh, yes. It's called Getting Back to Happy. It's a really important topic for a little girl that's suffering from anxiety.
Yeah. No, we really enjoyed it. And our daughter enjoyed it. And she's 9. Great conversations and great subjects. Obviously, very apparent today. So I loved the path that I saw for you, you know, reading up when we were getting ready for the podcast, that you've been a registered nurse for 30 years. And it sounds like a lot of that is what really inspired you to go in this direction of linking mental and physical health together.
Yes. One thing I loved about medicine is when patients would come in, it was almost like being a detective to figure out why they were having symptoms or pain. And the body is so sophisticated. I used to find it fascinating. And then when I went into mental health, I thought it was a little bit more blurry. Didn't realize why people had anxiety or depression. But then I was quickly able to link the correlation between our mental health and our physical health. I find it fascinating. Such a great field.
And I love that you teach and talk about that mind-body integration. And now when you reference how connected those things are, can you give us some examples or some top stories where you really saw
That's a great question.
How connected the mind and the body were?
Well, the interesting thing is the emotions and experiences that we have, depending upon what emotion or experience it is, it will be processed in different parts of the body. For example, when you're around someone and for whatever reason, you might not trust them, you feel like they're not trustworthy, we feel that in the stomach. Mm-hmm. And that's the energy, it's the solar plexus where trust is somewhat processed. And you might not know why you don't trust that person, but you say, gosh, I got a gut feeling this person is or isn't, whatever. And it's really interesting to me, if time goes by and we don't process certain emotions, they will manifest physically.
Interesting. So what did you see possibly in your nursing, any confidentiality, but was there any like cases where you said, wow, this is causing this, you know, that link between the mental and the physical? Was there any clear times that you're like, I am seeing this so clearly?
The only thing I can tell you about with nursing, I worked in critical care. So by the time we received a patient or a patient was admitted, they were in pretty tough circumstances, you know, pretty grave condition. I can tell you by looking at their history, it was no surprise that they were having whatever problem. With mental health, it's the same thing. It's once the body starts to manifest physically and you look back at what their experiences are, it's a puzzle that will quickly be pieced together.
I think 15 or 16 years ago, I was actually diagnosed with MS, and not once, but by 2 or 3 doctors. And I never claimed it. I was in a sea and a storm that I couldn't easily find a way out of. And I had a horrible first marriage, abuse, and I had 2 little boys I'm carrying with me with sole custody. Everything was coming in and I was very, very sick. But when I received that diagnosis, I thought, I know that I'm not sick. And I never claimed it. I refused to, because I knew that there had to be something different. And if I accepted that diagnosis, then I would forever be sick.
So we've seen firsthand what can manifest from stress-related things.
That mental, physical balance. I mean, that's just that like a huge...
It not mocks, but what would it be called?
It's a great imitator.
It's an imitator of certain things, at least. I don't know how you feel on that, but we've seen that in a few instances in our life now.
Yes. And what happens is when energy is blocked in the body, depending upon where it is, illness or disease is looking for a place to replicate or to duplicate or to manifest. And so it only makes sense when I'm seeing patients and I know what they're struggling with physically, I could almost stop them and tell them what they have struggled with over the years emotionally or with mental health.
That's amazing.
And is there a common theme you're seeing right now? Like, for example, we were on a very interesting podcast earlier today about a long-term educator talking about, and this is a big subject, about effects of too much electronics, being on tech too much. Are you seeing anything different in the last 10 years or so with this connection from just ways we're living and it's coming out physically? Is there anything you're seeing in that pattern?
Absolutely. What happens with technology, and even though we feel like we look at it a lot of times to relax, it keeps the mind in what we call our sympathetic nervous system. The mind is very much engaged, and that may be our downtime, but it's not downtime for the mind. Probably across the board with society, I think we're overstimulated. And so children and even adults were having a lot of anxiety, and coupled with anxiety is depression and procrastination. It's really lack of balance for the nervous system.
And I know shedding light on anxiety is part of the work that you do. What does this new anxiety you're seeing just from, I mean, we've had too much tech, the pandemics, all these things. What are you seeing manifest physically? Are you seeing things like what Jamie went through? Are there some common physical things that a lot of people, you see it, other people, it goes right over their head?
And they prescribe something?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. When I see a child or a teenager in my office and they're yawning quite a bit, that's an indication that they have too much stimulation, usually too many electronics, too much time on electronics. We're seeing a lot of tics with children, a lot of leg bouncing, a lot of fidgeting and so forth. It's just one of the indicators. It's the body's showing symptoms that the nervous system is out of balance.
Yeah. How do you guide your clients to nurture that their mind and their body so that we don't become overstimulated?
And I would think that that's probably the million-dollar question, because a lot of people, you can explain how important it is, but it's one thing if they hear it and they'll likely say, I know I work too much, or I know I spend too much time on electronics, but getting them to actually make a shift is probably my greatest challenge.
Interesting.
And what are some of the top things you suggest to be able to nurture and create that greater integration between mind and body?
I think one is to really start to discipline the mind. We've gotten to that point where every thought that we think, we will take it down a very dark road quickly if our mind is not disciplined.
And how do you discipline the mind?
I give the best example. When I was in critical care, all the patients were hooked up to a monitor. And as you can imagine, all shift long, that monitor would go off for one reason or another. We tell my clients now, when the monitor went off, I didn't run and get the crash cart. I went in, I took a look, and maybe this was something that I needed some help with, but maybe it wasn't. And yet we take our thoughts and without even really thinking about it, we go right into, well, this could mean this, and if this means this, and that could happen. And what we don't realize is that the body follows the mind. So the body is responding as if all of these things are happening. And this is why we're excreting too much cortisol.
Isn't that interesting? There was a great book that Jamie and I read about called The Body Keeps the Score. Have you ever heard of that book?
Yes, I've read it. Excellent book.
And a lot of the people, including Jamie and I, we had some different traumas early on in life. And I'm sure that's no news to you in the work that you've been in for 30 plus years. And when you see that, how have you helped people? Because I'm sure you get this where, gosh, there is some physical issues happening here with mental, but it's really old stuff. I mean, it's from years ago. What is your approach to that? Do you have a certain approach that you try to help people pry that out or move through that? Is there certain things that you recommend?
Asking for a friend.
Just asking for a friend. Not me.
Well, it's interesting. I have a stack of index cards and they have about 40 emotions on them, like abandonment, feeling inferior, anger, rage, bitter. So I'll show them the cards and I'll say, just tell me if you struggle with any of these. And so when we get all finished, we have our stack because we have some yes and no's. And I'll say, these are experiences that you've had. Maybe this has to do with your trauma or it has to do with a divorce or whatever, that for some reason you've held. And we hold them so that we think we might need them. So we're like, all right, I'll hold this so I can protect myself against it. But what it actually does is it's a lot for the body to hold. Wow. Trauma in particularly a lot of times manifests in the back.
Interesting.
And Jamie, when you were mentioning MS, that's autoimmune, and that's actually at the grounding chakra, not feeling at peace. That's one of the experiences that will cause that energy to block. And we see autoimmune depression sits there, back pain, rectal cancer. A lot of things sit down right at the base of the spine.
Hey there, friends. Let's talk about what really matters in life: money, freedom, and family. You know, the things that keep us going, but occasionally drive us crazy as well. Now imagine if you could have all three at once. Crazy, right? To think that? But it's possible with mine and Jamie's passive income playbook. It's the perfect blueprint for creating a build-to-rent passive income generating real estate portfolio that gives you and your family the freedom and passive income that you deserve. Now I'm not just talking about some small change here. We're talking about real tangible income that will allow you to never miss that family event, that ball game, or the vacation ever again. Now I know what you're thinking. Oh, but investing in real estate is so hard and time consuming. But fear not, my friend. The passive income playbook makes it easy and very straightforward, step by step. So why not visit jjplaybook.com today and schedule a conversation with one of our sales counselors and download your own copy. Trust me, it'll be the best investment you make this year. Besides, maybe you get that feeling that you're going to buy back your time and also create a legendary family life. Because let's be honest, what's better than financial freedom and quality family time? Not much, except maybe that peace of mind that comes when you know you'll never have to choose between work and family again. So go ahead, make the investment and prioritize what truly matters in life. Your family will thank you. One more time, go ahead and visit jjplaybook.com.
Isn't that interesting? Is there any other like manifestations you're seeing, like a certain type of cancer or diagnosis that you're thinking has a link to it? Not that I'm holding you to it, but just some very interesting correlations you might be noticing.
And I will tell you that I've never noticed a correlation that it didn't work out. Like I would say, oh, it's weird because the body is so sophisticated. It doesn't misbehave for no reason.
Isn't that interesting?
So for example, thyroid problems. So somebody says, I have hypothyroidism, thyroid problems. That's in the throat. Obviously, it's right here. And so then I'm wondering, maybe they're not feeling heard. Maybe they've held on to a secret. Maybe dad was an alcoholic. Maybe there was some family dysfunctionality that they were never allowed to talk about. There's something in the throat. Maybe they were never able to fulfill their dream. And so what I will do is once I know what's happening physically, I will start to gear my questions around that topic to see if there's something there. I actually see it sometimes with young kids that are gay and they haven't exactly said that. That's in the throat. They can't exactly express it because maybe it won't be received.
Wow.
So it's just fascinating how the body starts to manifest. And that definitely has a reason.
It tells on us.
It does.
Body tells the score.
The body keeps the score. Absolutely.
Now,
breast cancer. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Continue.
I was going to say breast cancer is another one, which we see a lot. And we may say, oh, my mother had it. My grandmother had it. So therefore, but with breast cancer, that's around the heart. That's what the energy around the heart. Anxiety is very hard on that, on the breasts and on the heart and on the lungs. Heart issues, lung issues. But the emotions are bitterness, resentment is there, anger, anxiety. So these are all emotions that we experience that can manifest into heart problems, lung problems. And in women, we see breast cancer.
So that breast cancer for women.
For women, yeah. And that was the first thing I thought of, only because of my limited non-medical view. But the women that I see that end up with these intense breast cancer situations, it's women that like, I mean, breasts are our life force. That's how we nurse our baby. And it's just this giving and giving and giving. And I see that sometimes as givers, you can become resentful or it can make you anxious if you're not caring for yourself. And so...
And what I wanted to ask is the counterpart then. You're hearing more and more about breast cancer, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm also hearing a lot more about prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. And so I always wonder, I actually had a scare a few years ago of prostatitis, which luckily is not cancer, but it was really scary. Mm-hmm. And so I, in reading those books and this type of lessons we've tried to teach, have you seen a correlation between things like prostate cancer and some similar low vibe emotions, experiences?
So that would be around, there's its second energy, the second chakra. Power and control are there. Money issues are there. Guilt and blame are there. And a quick way to sort of bring it all together, somebody who's struggling to have a baby, and then they feel guilty and so forth. And then they'll adopt a baby finally. And next thing you know, they're pregnant.
Because they've released it.
Because they've released it. All of a sudden now it's a non-issue because they have a baby, and then all of that energy starts to open and circulate. And next thing you know, they have two babies.
So when isn't it? And we have plenty of stories
we have
like
five
that.
Babies. Yeah. Actually, we always have extra babies.
When you hear about this, linking those kind of lower emotions to breast cancer, to prostate cancer, is there a way that you try to guide people, Denise, to elevate that mental fortitude, to focus on different emotions, or is that not part of your work?
No, that's definitely part of my work. And there are a lot of ways to help that. So help raise the vibrational frequency in the body. Mm-hmm. One of the ways, which is really difficult to convince people, is self-care. I'm so busy and I don't have time and so forth. And I said, you're never going to find it. You have to make it. Self-care is huge. Our perception of an experience is key.
So give an example. What does that mean?
Well, when something happens to us that we don't like, a decision or something that happens to us that we did not want or we did not ask for, there's always meaning or some sort of example or lesson in that. And what we tend to do is we feel guilty or we're bitter and resentful. And why did this happen to me? And so we take it as it's the end of the world when it's just something that happened to us that maybe is a really good life lesson.
Which then returns us to the note cards of what we carry and that we don't have to carry it.
Right. And when we hold those cards, boy, they come up quickly. Even if it's a brand new experience, we'll pull a card.
Yeah. And that's, what is,
hold on,
you want to
pull a card. No, okay. I like that. We'll pull a card. And I feel like we've even used that terminology in discussions, but in like heated moments between us that it's like, oh, that card, you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like that's thing. So, you know, it's like that one thing and like the one thing you, not anymore because we've had lots of, but it like, sometimes your thing was rooted in like money and sometimes my thing was rooted in responsibility or care to, you know what I mean? Like these are our wounds, absolutely. Like most definitely. Yes. And so seriously, it was always, those are our two cards.
Yeah. Oh, well, isn't that interesting? But how do you start to, and we've done a lot of work on this, but for people that are listening out there, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling that low emotion. Oh, I don't have prostate problems, but I'm struggling. All those things that you said, or gosh, I had a scare with breast cancer. What is the first step?
Like the turnaround.
The turning point or the first step in the right direction. Is it just recognizing that you're in these emotions? Is it, you know, Yes. Okay.
I say, don't judge them. Just be aware of them.
Right.
Yes.
So that automatically, once we're aware of them, now they're neutral. Okay. This is how I'm feeling. And then we have to process them. Is this something that I don't like? Is this something that's painful? Okay. How can I move through it? And when we find meaning to suffering, it's no longer suffering.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So find meaning in your suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Well, saying that our friend says, who runs a lot of personal development groups and has a really good message, he said, your gift is next to your wound sometimes, your greatest gift.
True.
So.
Yes, true. Or we can cling to our wound and that can become part of our identity.
Yeah. To give public credit to the difficulties Jamie went through years ago, she shares a certain amount to inspire and support, but it has never, ever become her alibi. Or she's like, this isn't my story. And I just see such a strength. And I've seen her teach a lot of people that, look, don't make that your alibi. Don't make that your end factor. I think you've felt better for it. And I've also given more hope because of that.
Yeah, because I used to just not speak at all because I'm like, put that in a box. If I talk about it, even in a positive way of changing it, then it existed. And so there used to be shame involved in the fact that it ever existed. And I think once we went from being sick to being ashamed of ever being in a situation where I could be that way. And then once I could put down that shame, I thought, wow, this is actually a light. Like this can guide other people to identify and feel and know, like we don't have to stay where we find ourselves. We don't have to be ashamed of ever being in these places and going through all of those pieces. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the books, that my first book that I had written, it's called Healing Your Body by Mastering Your Mind. Mm-hmm. And it talks about all of these energies. And at the end of every chapter, I wrote my own story, because mm-hmm. I felt like it was important for people to know that we all have a story. Yeah. We've all had struggles, and this is what connects us. And a lot of people say that that was their favorite part of the book, not because I've struggled, but to realize that we're all connected to each other. And just because I've written a book about it doesn't mean that I got to escape all of that.
Sure.
Well, I was going to ask, so does that mean that your gift is next to your wound?
Mm-hmm. And why go through it if we can't go out into the other side and help each other?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, Denise, how have parents, let's say you have a child that's gone through these some tough things. There's been mental health issues that have been caused by things outside of control and physical health. What do you tell to parents? Because us as adults can say, gosh, we want to work on this. We're all in. We want to move through it. It might be harder for a young child, or definitely a teen. How do you approach that with a parent or even the teen themselves to even open up like it can get better, or just maybe this is something we may want to address and try to work on for improvement? Is it a hard subject, I'm sure, to breach?
Well, it depends. One thing I love about children is they're open to wonder. So they're interested in listening, and they're very curious, which is fantastic, because then I can go in and introduce some things that maybe it's worth thinking about or considering or whatnot. I have found that if the parents are not in good shape as far as mental health and there's a lot of dysfunctionality, it's a little bit more challenging, because I can only do so much in an hour as opposed to them having them all during the week. And a lot of times parents, out of guilt, will nurture their wounds or their anxieties and their insecurities. And unfortunately, that's not very helpful. If we give it too much attention, I mean, certainly we want to be compassionate. I certainly don't want to say that we don't want to acknowledge it, but we have to be careful not to become their identity.
Is it weird for me to use the word like enabling it a bit?
Yes.
If in our home, I'm trying to make an example out of this. So like if it were Jim and I, and one of us struggled with, say, anxiety, and you were always telling the children, no, you know, mom gets really nervous about this. Is that what you're saying? Like, that's almost like an enabling, instead of navigating and supporting me to support myself. You're mm-hmm. almost like making barriers around my mental health.
Yes. Well, I've also seen too, and I don't know if this is something you've had to coach parents on, friends that we have, say they've gone through a painful situation like a divorce, and it seems like everything can be turned back to the divorce. And I don't even think they consciously realize they're doing it, saying, but all of a sudden you'll say, oh, we were looking at going there next Tuesday. Next Tuesday would be good. I remember Tuesday, the blah, blah, when all of a sudden she did this and did that. And they're always turning it back to something that happened in the divorce, or overcoming a piece of the divorce. I remember when they tried to do this to me. They're almost stuck in this loop. And I think we all get caught in them. But I imagine that's what you're talking about. So if they're doing that, say there's divorced parents and they're doing that around the child, that starts to really weigh, I'm sure, on the members of the family around them. Would that not be true?
Yes. And then we get very committed to our pain, where everything that we're mentioning, we sort of let that surface.
Yeah.
The pain of the divorce. And the trouble with kids is they don't know what to do with that. So they feel like it's something that they've done.
Yeah.
So they're like, where do I put that? How do I fix that? Mom's pissed. I'm the only person in the car. Like, what is that?
Right. And it's my fault.
Is this the biggest issue you're seeing? People holding on to this hurt and using it as kind of the trump card and the leading discussion of everything they talk about. Is that the biggest mistake you see parents making right now? Or is there something else that seems to be really rising to the top?
Certainly, if the parents are going through the divorce in a civil manner as possible, civilly as possible, the kids do pretty well. The same thing is if, God forbid, there's a death or a trauma. If everybody's fairly mentally healthy, they should come out on the other side pretty easily. But sometimes the parents use the children to get back at each other. Mm. In fact, this was my book that I have. It's having being illustrated now, about a little boy who's stuck in the middle of his parents' divorce. Mm-hmm. And dad shows the little boy in the book the text messages that mom sent, which are not very nice, as you can imagine. And it's about, and his grades start to fall. And now mom's blaming the dad about not being responsible. And now the little boy is taking that on as his problem and that he's causing it. So you can imagine how it can dysfunctional it can get and how much anxiety and trauma that can actually create in a child.
Yeah. Denise, how much do we express to our children about difficult situations? So to take that exact same situation that you're writing the book on, if we were to change those characters into parents that have a healthy dose of communicating to those children, what would that look like? Would it be dad and I love each other and you very much? However, we do best if we don't live in the same house? Or like, what is a layer in which the child doesn't take it on?
Well, it would have to be sort of a neutral energy, as you just sort of gave us a good example of, or positive. I always say to the parents, I don't care what it is, you don't put dad in a bad light. Unfortunately, dad can't come to your soccer game. He's got a business meeting, but he's really disappointed and hopefully he'll be able to come to the next one. Mm-hmm. You don't have to say, well, you know, he chooses business over you, but I'll be there. I mean, you can see where that causes a child to feel very conflicted.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Denise, where can people learn more about what you're doing? First of all, the kids book, we loved it. I think the next one will be really interesting, especially for a lot of families we've worked with, mm-hmm. for sure. But where can people learn more about your coaching, getting a copy of the book you sent us? Thank you again.
You're welcome. On my website, which is my name, deniseschoenwald.com, there's a few things. One, there's a 10-question quiz to assess your own mental health. It takes maybe 5 minutes or less. I think it'd be good for everybody to take that.
Absolutely.
I will get a copy of it, and I will likely to respond one time to say what I thought of the results and what I might want to suggest. That would be one way of connecting with me. The second way is if you're on my website, I've authored 3 books. If you would like to look through them, pick one, email me. I'd be happy to send them a copy free of charge, just as a gift for listening today.
Oh, so I'd be happy to do that. Thank you so much. That's awesome for our listeners.
And the third way, always book an appointment with me online. I have my schedule on my website. If somebody, I accept most insurances, somebody would like to meet with me. I'm licensed in the state of Florida and also nationally. So I see people all over the United States.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom today. I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Welcome.
Very good conversation. We'll hope to see you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Denise.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.